It's like trying to raise a corpse.
The dead request 5 more minutes,
she would say, and bury her head in the furs. He'd stomp around, packing their few things as loudly as possible, grumbling to himself. Lazy, ridiculous, selfish. Until she finally roused herself and set about preparing for the day.
What's the first thing you're going to do when you get home?
She asked him on one of their endless days trekking through the snow, hoping to find some sign of civilization.
Sleep, he said. Bathe.
Pray for my lost friends.
Oh yes, the other thugs and killers. How did you become a Druskella anyway?
Your friends slaughtered my family in a Grisha raid, he'd said coldly. Vroom took me in and gave me something to fight for.
Nina hadn't wanted to believe that, but she knew it was possible.
Battles happened, innocent lives were lost in the crossfire. It was equally disturbing to think of that monster Vroom as some kind of father figure. It didn't seem right to argue or to apologize, so she said the first thing that popped into her head.
Jermola peunit. In il murdjanej afatrohem verit.
I have been made to protect you. Only in death will I be kept from this oath. Matthias had stared at her in shock.
That's the Druskella oath to Fjord. How do you know those words?
I tried to learn as much about Fjord as I could.
Why?
She'd wavered, then said, so I wouldn't fear you.
You don't seem afraid.
Are you afraid of me? She'd asked.
No,
he'd said. And he'd sounded almost surprised. He'd claimed before that he didn't fear her. This time she believed him. She tried to remind herself that wasn't a good thing. They'd walked on for a while, and then he'd asked,
What's the first thing you're going to do?
Eat.
Eat what?
Everything. Stuffed cabbage, potato dumplings, black currant cakes, blini with lemon zest. I can't wait to see Zoya's face when I come walking into the little palace.
Zoya Nazulensky?
Nina had stopped short.
You know her?
We all know of her. She's a powerful witch.
It had hit her then. For the Druskella, Zoya was a little like Jarl Vroom. Cruel, inhuman, the thing that waited in the dark with death in her hands. Zoya was this boy's monster. The thought left her uneasy.
How did you get out of the cages?
Nina blinked.
What?
On the ship. You were bound and in cages.
The water cup. The handle broke and the lip was jagged beneath. We used it to cut through our bonds. Once our hands were free. Nina trailed off awkwardly. Matthias' brow lowered.
You were planning to attack us.
We were going to make our move that night.
But then the storm hit.
Yes. A squaller and a fabricator had smashed a hole right through the deck, and they'd swum free. But had any of them survived the icy waters? Had they managed to make their way to land? She shivered. If they hadn't discovered the cup's secret, she would have drowned in a cage.
What do Druskella eat?
She asked, picking up her pace.
Other than Grisha babies.
We don't eat babies.
Dolphin blubber? Reindeer hooves?
She saw his mouth twist and wondered if he was nauseous, or if maybe, possibly, he was trying not to laugh.
We eat a lot of fish. Herring, salt cod, and yes, reindeer, but not the hooves.
How about cake?
What about it?
I'm very keen on cake. I'm wondering if we can find some common ground.
He shrugged.
Oh, come on, Druskella, she said.
They still hadn't exchanged names, and she wasn't sure they should. Eventually, if they survived, they would reach a town or village. She didn't know what would happen then, but the less he knew about her, the better, in any case.
You're not giving up Fjordan government secrets. I just want to know why you don't like cake.
I do like cake, but we're not permitted sweets.
Anyone? Or just Druskella?
Druskella. It's considered an indulgence, like alcohol or...
Girls?
His cheeks reddened, and he trudged forward.
It was just so easy to make him uncomfortable. If you're not allowed sugar or alcohol, you'd probably really love Pomme Dracon. He hadn't taken the bait at first, just walked on. But finally, the quiet proved too much for him.
What's Pomme Dracon?
Dragon Vole, Nina said eagerly. First you soak raisins in brandy, and then you turn off the lights and set them on fire.
Why?
To make it hard to grab them.
What do you do once you have them?
You eat them.
Don't they burn your tongue?
Sure, but...
Then why would you...
Because it's fun, dummy. You know, fun. There's a word for it in Fjordan, so you must be familiar with the term.
I have plenty of fun.
All right. What do you do for fun? And that was the way they went on, sniping at each other, just like that first night in the water, keeping each other alive, refusing to acknowledge that they were growing weaker, that if they didn't find a real town soon, they weren't going to last much longer. There were days when their hunger and the glare off the northern ice had them moving in circles, backtracking, faltering over their own steps. But they never spoke of it, never said the word lost, as if they both knew that would somehow be admitting defeat.
Why don't Fjordans let girls fight? She asked him one night, as they'd lain curled beneath a lean-to, the cold palpable through the skins they'd laid on the ground.
They don't want to fight.
How do you know? Have you ever asked one?
Fjordan women are to be venerated, protected.
That's probably a wise policy. He'd known her well enough by then to be surprised.
It is?
Think how embarrassing it would be for you when you got trounced by a Fjordan girl. He snorted. I'd love to see you get beaten by a girl, she said happily.
Not in this lifetime.
Well, I guess I won't get to see it. I'll just get to live the moment when I knock you on your ass. This time he did laugh. A proper laugh that she could feel through her back. Saints, Fjordan, I didn't know you could laugh. Careful now, take it slow.
I enjoy your arrogance, Thruja.
Now she laughed. That may be the worst compliment I've received.
Do you never doubt yourself?
All the time, she'd said as she slid into sleep. I just don't show it. The next morning, they picked their way across an ice field splintered by jagged crevices, keeping to the solid expanses between the deadly rifts, and arguing about Nina's sleeping habits.
How can you call yourself a soldier? You'd sleep until noon if I'd let you.
What does that have to do with anything?
Discipline. Routine. Does it mean nothing to you? Jill, I can't wait to have a bed to myself again.
Right, said Nina. I can feel just how much you hate sleeping next to me. I feel it every morning. Matthias flushed bright scarlet.
Why do you have to say things like that?
Because I like it when you turn red.
It's disgusting. You don't need to make everything lewd.
If you would just relax...
I don't want to relax.
Why? What are you so afraid will happen? Afraid you might start to like me? He said nothing. Despite her fatigue, she trotted ahead of him. That's it, isn't it? You don't want to like a Grisha. You're scared that if you laugh at my jokes or answer my questions, you might start thinking I'm human. Would that be so terrible?
I do like you.
What was that?
I do like you,
he said angrily. She'd beamed, feeling a well of pleasure erupt through her. Now really, is that so bad?
Yes,
he roared. Why?
Because you're horrible. You're loud and lewd and treacherous. Broom warned us that Grisha could be charming.
Oh, I see. I'm the wicked Grisha seductress. I have beguiled you with my Grisha wiles. She poked him in the chest.
Stop that.
No, I'm beguiling you.
Quit it.
She danced around him in the snow, poking his chest, his stomach, his side. Goodness, you're very solid. This is strenuous work. He started to laugh. It's working. The beguiling has begun. The Fjordan has fallen. You are powerless to resist me. You... Nina's voice broke off in a scream as the ice gave way beneath her feet. She threw her hands out blindly, reaching for something, anything that might stop her fall, fingers scraping over ice and rock. The Druskella grabbed her arm, and she cried out as it was nearly wrenched from its socket. She hung there, suspended over nothing, the grip of his fingers the only thing between her and the dark mouth of the ice. For a moment, looking into his eyes, she was certain he was going to let go.
"Please,"
she said, tears sliding over her cheeks. He dragged her up over the edge, and slowly they crawled onto more solid ground. They lay on their backs, panting.
"I was afraid. I was afraid you were going to let me go,"
she managed. There was a long pause, and then he said,
"I thought about it. Just for a second."
Nina huffed out a little laugh.
"It's okay," she said at last. "I would have thought about it, too."
He got to his feet and offered her his hand.
"I'm Matthias."
"Nina," she said, taking it. "Nice to make your acquaintance."
The shipwreck had been more than a year ago, but it felt like no time had passed at all. Part of Nina wanted to go back to the moment before everything had gone wrong, to those long days on the ice when they'd managed to be Nina and Matthias instead of Grisha and Witch Hunter. But the more she thought about it, the more surely she knew there had never been a moment like that. Those 3 weeks were a lie that she and Matthias had built to survive. The truth was the pyre.
"Nina,"
Matthias said, jogging up behind her now.
"Nina, listen to me. You need to stay with the others."
"Leave me alone."
When he took her arm, she whirled and clenched her fist, cutting off the air to his throat. An ordinary man would have released her, but Matthias was a trained Druskella. He seized her other arm and clamped it to her body, bundling her tight to him so she couldn't use her hands.
"Stop,"
he said softly. She struggled against his hold, glaring up at him.
"Let me go."
"I can't. Not while you're a threat."
"I will always be a threat to you, Matthias."
The corner of his mouth pulled up in a rueful smile. His eyes were almost sorrowful.
"I know."
Slowly he released her. She stepped back.
"What will I see when I get to the ice court?" she demanded.
"You're frightened."
"Yes,"
she said, chin jutting up defiantly. There was no point denying it.
"Nina."
"Tell me. I need to know. Torture chambers? A pyre blazing from a rooftop?"
"They don't use pyres at the court anymore."
"Then what? Drawing and quartering? Firing squads? Does the royal palace have a view of the gallows?"
"I've had enough of your judgments, Nina. This has to stop."
"He's right. You can't go on this way."
Jesper was standing in the snow with the others. How long had they been there? Had they seen her attack Matthias?
"Stay out of this," Nina snapped.
"If you two keep fighting, you're gonna get us all killed, and I have a lot more card games I need to lose."
"You must find a way to make peace," said Inej. "At least for a while."
"This is not your concern,"
Matthias growled. Kaz stepped forward, his expression dangerous.
"It is very much our concern."
"And what's your tone?"
Matthias threw up his hands. "You've all been taken in by her. This is what she does. She makes you think she's your friend, and then..."
Inej crossed her arms. "Then what?"
"Let it go, Inej."
"No, Nina,"
Matthias said.
"Tell them. You said you were my friend once. Do you remember?"
He turned to the others.
"We traveled together for 3 weeks. I saved her life. We saved each other. When we got to Elling, I could have revealed her to the soldiers we saw there at any time, but I didn't."
Matthias started pacing, his voice rising, as if the memories were getting the better of him.
"I borrowed money. I arranged lodging. I was willing to betray everything I believed in for the sake of her safety. When I saw her down to the dock so we could try to book passage, there was a curt traitor there ready to set sail."
Matthias was there again, standing on the docks with her. She could see it in his eyes.
"Ask her what she did then, this honorable ally, this girl who stands in judgment of me and my kind."
No one said a word. that they were watching, waiting.
Tell them, Nina,
he demanded.
They should know how you treat your friends.
Nina swallowed, then forced herself to meet their gazes. I told the Kirch that he was a slaver and that he'd taken me prisoner. I threw myself on their mercy and begged them to help me. I had a seal I'd taken from a slaving ship we'd raided near the Wandering Isle. I used it as proof. She couldn't bear to look at them. Kaz knew, of course. She'd had to tell him the charges she'd made and tried to recant when she was begging for his assistance. But Kaz had never probed, never asked why, never chastised her. In a way, telling Kaz had been a comfort. There could be no judgment from a boy known as Dirty Hands. But now the truth was there for everyone to see. Privately, the Kirch knew slaves moved in and out of the ports of Ketterdam, and most indentures were really slaves by another name. But publicly, they reviled it and were obligated to prosecute all slavers. Nina had known exactly what would happen when she'd branded Matthias with that charge.
I didn't understand what was happening,
said Matthias.
I didn't speak Kirch, but Nina certainly did. They seized me and put me in chains. They tossed me in the brig and kept me there in the dark for weeks while we crossed the sea. The next time I saw daylight was when they led me off the ship in Ketterdam.
I had no choice,
Nina said, the ache of tears pressing at her throat.
You don't know.
Just tell me one thing,
he said. There was anger in his voice, but she could hear something else, too, a kind of pleading.
If you could go back, if you could undo what you did to me, would you?
Nina made herself face them. She had her reasons, but did they matter? And who were they to judge her? She straightened her spine, lifted her chin. She was a member of the Dregs, an employee of the White Rose, and occasionally a foolish girl. But before anything else, she was a Grisha and a soldier. No, she said clearly, her voice echoing off the endless ice. I'd do it all over again. A sudden rumble shook the ground. Nina nearly lost her footing, and she saw Kaz brace himself with his walking stick. They exchanged puzzled glances.
Are there fault lines this far north?
Wylan asked. Matthias frowned.
Not that I know of, but...
A slab of earth shot up from beneath Matthias's feet, knocking him to the ground. Another erupted to Nina's right, sending her sprawling. All around them, crooked monoliths of earth and ice burst upward, as if the ground were coming to life. A harsh wind whipped at their faces, snow spinning in flurries.
What the hell is this? Cried Jesper.
Some kind of earthquake, shouted Inej.
No, said Nina, pointing to a dark spot that seemed to be floating in the sky, unaffected by the howling wind.
We're under attack.
Nina crawled on hands and knees, seeking some kind of shelter. She thought she might well have lost her mind. There was someone in the air, hovering in the sky high above her. She was watching someone fly. Grisha squallers could control current. She'd even seen them play at tossing each other into the air at the little palace. But the level of finesse and power it took to maintain controlled flight was unthinkable. At least it had been, until now. Jurda Parem. She hadn't quite believed Kaz. Maybe she'd even suspected him of outright lying to her about what he'd seen just to get her to do the job. But unless she'd taken a blow to the head she didn't remember, this was real. The squaller turned in the air, stirring the storm into a frenzy, sending ice flying until it stung her cheeks. She could barely see. She fell backward as another slab of rock and ice shot from the ground. They were being corralled, pushed closer together to make a single target.
I need a distraction, shouted Jesper from somewhere in the storm.
She heard a tiny plink.
Get down,
cried Wylan. Nina flattened her body to the snow. A boom sounded overhead, and an explosion lit the sky just to the right of the squaller. The winds around them dropped as the squaller was thrown off course and forced to focus on righting himself. It took the briefest second, but it was enough time for Jesper to aim his rifle and fire. A shot rang out, and the squalor was hurtling toward the earth. Another slab of ice slid into place. They were being trapped like animals in a pen, ready for the slaughter. Jesper aimed between the slabs at a distant stand of trees, and Nina realized there was another Grisha there. A boy with dark hair. Before Jesper could get off a shot, the Grisha rammed a fist upward, and Jesper was thrown off his feet by a shaft of earth. He rolled as he fell, and fired from the ground. The boy in the distance cried out, and dropped to one knee, but his arms were still raised, and the ground still rumbled and rocked beneath them. Jesper fired again and missed. Nina lifted her hands and tried to focus on the Grisha's heart, but he was well out of her range. She saw Inej signal to Kaz. Without a word, he positioned himself against the nearest slab and cupped his hands at his knee. The ground buckled and swayed, but he held steady as she launched herself from the cradle of his fingers in a graceful arc. She vanished over the slab without a sound. A moment later, the ground went still.
"Trust the Wraith," said Jesper.
They stood, dazed. The air strangely hushed after the chaos that had come before.
"Wylan,"
Jesper panted, pushing to his feet.
"Get us out of here."
Wylan nodded, pulled a putty-colored lump from his pack, and gently placed it against the nearest rock.
"Everybody down," he instructed.
They crouched together in a cluster as far away as the enclosure would permit. Wylan slapped his hand against the explosive and dove away, careening into Matthias and Jesper, as they all covered their ears. Nothing happened.
"Are you kidding me?"
said Jesper. Boom. The slab exploded. Ice and bits of rock rained down over their heads. Wylan was covered in dust and wearing a slightly dazed, deliriously happy expression. Nina started to laugh.
"Try to look like you knew it would work."
They stumbled out of the corral of slabs. Kaz gestured to Jesper.
"Perimeter. Let's make sure there aren't more surprises."
They set off in opposite directions. Nina and the others found Inej standing over the body of the trembling Grisha. He wore clothes of olive drab, and his eyes were glassy. Blood spilled from the bullet wound in his upper thigh, and a knife jutted from the right side of his chest. Inej must have thrown it when she'd escaped from the enclosure. Nina knelt beside him.
"I need a little more,"
the Grisha mumbled.
"Just a little more."
He grabbed at Nina's hand, and only then did she recognize him.
"Nestor?"
He twitched at the sound of his name, but he didn't seem to know her.
"Nestor, it's me, Nina."
She had been at school with him back at the little palace. They'd been sent to Karamzin together during the war. At King Nikolai's coronation, they'd stolen a bottle of champagne and gotten sick by the lake. He was a fabricator, one of the Durasts who worked with metal, glass, and fibers. It didn't make sense. Fabricators made textiles, weapons. He shouldn't have been capable of what she'd just witnessed.
"Please,"
he begged, his face crumpling.
"I need more."
"Perem?"
"Yes,"
he sobbed.
"Yes, please."
"I can heal your wound, Nestor, if you stay still." He was in bad shape, but if she could stop the bleeding.
"I don't want your help,"
he said angrily, trying to push away from her. She tried calming him, lowering his pulse, but she was afraid of stopping his heart.
"Please, Nestor, please be still."
He was screaming now, fighting her.
"Hold him down," she said.
Matthias moved to help, and Nestor threw up his arms. The ground rose in a rippling sheet, thrusting Nina and the others back.
"Nestor, please let us help you."
He stood up, staggering on his wounded leg, pulling at the knife buried in his chest.
"Where are they?"
he screamed.
"Where did they go?"
"Who?"
"The shoe,"
he wailed.
"Where did they go? Come back."
He took a wobbling step, then another.
"Come back."
He fell face forward into the snow. He didn't move again. Nina rushed to his side and turned him over. There was snow in his eyes and his mouth. She placed her hands on his chest, trying to restore his heartbeat. But it was no good. If he hadn't been ravaged by the drug, he might have survived his wounds. but his body was weak, the skin tight to his bones, and so pale it seemed transparent.
This isn't right, Nina thought miserably.
Practicing the small science made Agresha healthier, stronger. It was one of the things she loved most about her power. But the body had limits. It was as if the drug had caused Nestor's power to outpace his body. It had simply used him up. Kaz and Jesper returned, panting.
Anything?
Asked Matthias. Jesper nodded.
A party of people heading south.
He was calling out for the shoe, Nina said.
We knew the shoe would send a team to retrieve Boyul Bayur, said Kaz.
Jesper looked down at Nestor's motionless body.
But we didn't know they'd send Grisha.
How can we be sure they aren't mercenaries?
Kaz held up a coin emblazoned with a horse on one side and two crossed keys on the other.
This was in the squalor's pocket, he said, tossing it to Jesper. It's a Shu Wenye, the coin of passage. This is a government mission.
How did they find us? Inej asked.
Maybe Jesper's gunshots drew them, said Kaz.
Jesper bristled and pointed at Nina and Matthias.
Or maybe they heard these two shouting at each other. They could have been following us for miles.
Nina tried to make sense of what she was hearing. Shu didn't use Grisha as soldiers, and they weren't like the Fjerdans.
They didn't see Grisha power as unnatural or repulsive.
They were fascinated by it, but they still viewed the Grisha as less than human. The Shu government had been capturing and experimenting on Grisha for years in an attempt to locate the source of their power.
They would never use Grisha as mercenaries.
Or at least that had been the case before. Maybe Parem had changed the game.
I don't understand, said Nina. If they have Jurda Parem, why go after Boyul Bayur?
It's possible they have a stash of it, but can't reproduce his process, Kaz said. That's what the Merchant Council seemed to think. Or maybe they just want to make sure Yul Bayur doesn't give the formula to anyone else.
Do you think they'll use drugged Grisha to try to break into the ice court? Inej asked.
If they have more of them, said Kaz. That's what I would do.
Matthias shook his head.
If they'd had a heart render, we'd all be dead.
It was still a close thing, replied Inej.
Jesper shouldered his rifle.
Wylan earned his keep.
Wylan gave a little jump at the sound of his name.
I did?
Well, you made a down payment.
Let's move, said Kaz.
We need to bury them, Nina said.
The ground's too hard, and we don't have the time. The Shu team is still moving toward Jerholm. We don't know how many other Grisha they may have, and Pekka's team could already be inside.
We can't just leave them for the wolves, she said, her throat tight.
Do you want to build them a pyre?
Go to hell, Brekker!
Do your job, Zenik,
he shot back.
I didn't bring you to Fjerda to perform funeral rites.
She lifted her hands.
How about I crack your skull open like a robin's egg?
You don't want to look at what's inside my head, Nina dear.
She took a step forward, but Matthias moved in front of her.
Stop,
he said.
I'll do it. I'll help you dig the grave.
Nina stared at him. He took a pick from his gear and handed it to her, then another from Jesper's pack.
Head due south from here,
he said to the others.
I know the terrain, and I'll make sure we catch up to you by nightfall. We'll move faster on our own.
Kaz looked at him steadily.
Just remember that pardon, Helvar.
Are we sure it's a good idea to leave them alone?
Wylan asked as they moved down the slope.
No,
replied Inej.
But we're still doing it?
We trust them now, or we trust them later, Kaz said. Are we going to talk about Matthias's little revelation about Nina's loyalties? Asked Jesper.
Nina could just make out Kaz's reply.
Pretty sure most of us don't have stalwart or true checked off on our resumes.
For all that she wanted to pummel Kaz, she couldn't help being a bit grateful, too. Matthias walked a few steps away from Nestor's body. He heaved the pick into the icy earth, wrenched it free, plunged it in again.
Here?
Nina asked.
Do you want him elsewhere?
I don't know. She gazed out at the fields of white, marked by sparse groves of birch. It all looks the same to me.
You know our gods?
Some, she said.
But you know Joe?
The Wellspring.
Matthias nodded. The Fjordans believe all the world is connected through its waters. The sea, the ice, the rivers and streams, the rain and storms. All feed Jell and are fed by him. When we die, we call it Felot Objer, taking root. We become as roots of the ash tree, drinking from Jell wherever we are laid.
Is that why you burn Grisha instead of burying them? He paused, then gave a brief nod. But you'll help me lay Nestor and the squalor to rest here? He nodded again. She took hold of the other pick and attempted to match his swing. The ground was hard and unyielding. Every time the pick struck the earth, it sent a rattling jolt up her arms. Nestor shouldn't have been able to do that, she said, her thoughts still churning. No Grisha can use power that way. It's all wrong. He was quiet for a moment, and then he said,
Do you understand a little better now? What it's like to face a power so alien? To face an enemy with such unnatural strength?
Nina tightened her hold on the pick. Nestor in the grip of Parem had seemed like a perversion of everything she loved about her power. Was that what Matthias and the other Fjordans saw in Grisha? Power beyond explanation? The natural world undone? Maybe. It was the most she could offer.
You said you had no choice at the harbor in Elling.
He said without looking at her. His pick rose and fell, the rhythm unbroken.
Was it because I was a Druskella? Were you planning it all along?
Nina remembered their last real day together, the elation they'd felt when they'd crested a steep hill and seen the port town spread out below. She'd been shocked to hear Matthias say,
I am almost sorry, Nina.
Almost?
I'm too hungry to really be sorry.
At last you succumbed to my influence. But how are we going to eat without any money? She asked as they headed down the hill. I may have to sell your pretty hair to a wig shop for cash.
Don't get ideas,
he'd said with a laugh. His laughter had come more easily as they'd traveled, as if he were becoming fluent in a new language.
If this is Elling, I should be able to find us lodging.
She'd stopped then, the truth of their situation returning to her with terrible clarity. She was deep in enemy territory with no allies, but a Druskella who'd thrown her in a cage only a few weeks earlier. But before she could speak, Matthias had said,
I owe you my life, Nina Zenik. We will get you safely home.
She'd been surprised at how easy it was to trust him. And he'd trusted her, too. Now she swung her pick, felt the impact reverberate up her arms and into her shoulders, and said, There were Grisha in Elling. He halted mid-swing.
What?
They were spies doing reconnaissance work in the port. They saw me enter the main square with you and recognized me from the little palace. One of them recognized you too, Matthias. He knew you from a skirmish near the border. Matthias remained still. They waylaid me when you went to speak to the manager of the boarding house, Nina continued. I convinced them I was undercover there too. They wanted to take you prisoner, but I told them that you weren't alone, that it would be too risky to try to capture you right away. I promised I would bring you to them the next day.
Why didn't you just tell me?
Nina tossed down her pick. Tell you there were Grisha spies in Elling? You might have made your peace with me, but you can't expect me to believe you wouldn't have revealed them. He looked away, a muscle twitching in his jaw, and she knew she'd spoken truth.
That morning,
he said.
On the docks.
I had to get us both away from Elling as fast as I could. I thought if I could just find us a vessel to stow away on. But the Grisha must have been watching the boarding house and seen us leave. When they showed up on the docks, I knew they were coming for you, Matthias.
If they'd captured you, you would have been taken to Ravka, interrogated, maybe executed. I spotted the Kurt trader. You know their laws on slaving.
Of course I do,
he said bitterly. I made the charge. I begged them to save me. I knew they'd have to take you into custody and bring us safely to Kurch. I didn't know... Matthias, I didn't know they'd throw you in Hellgate.
His eyes were hard when he faced her, his knuckles white on the handle of his pick.
Why didn't you speak up? Why didn't you tell the truth when we arrived in Ketterdam?
I tried. I swear it. I tried to recant. They wouldn't let me see a judge. They wouldn't let me see you. I couldn't explain the seal from the slaver or why I'd made the charges, not without revealing Ravka's intelligence operations. I would have compromised Grisha still in the field. I would have been sentencing them to death.
So you left me to rot in Hellgate?
I could have gone home to Ravka. Saints, I wanted to. But I stayed in Ketterdam. I gave up my wages for bribes, petitioned the court.
You did everything but tell the truth.
She'd meant to be gentle, apologetic, to tell him that she'd thought of him every night and every day. But the image of the pyre was still fresh in her mind.
I was trying to protect my people, people you've spent your life trying to exterminate.
He gave a rueful laugh, turning the pick over in his hands.
Wanden Ostrum in Kenden Sorum.
It was the first part of a Fjerdan saying. The water hears and understands. It sounded kind enough. But Matthias knew that Nina would be familiar with the rest of it.
Isen the Bestrum,
she finished. The water hears and understands. The ice does not forgive.
And what will you do now, Nina? Will you betray the people you call friends again, for the sake of the Grisha?
What?
You can't tell me you intend to let Bojul Bajur live.
He knew her well. With every new thing she'd learned of Jorda Parem, she'd been more certain that the only way to protect Grisha was to end the scientist's life. She thought of Nestor begging with his last breath for his shoemasters to return.
I can't bear the thought of my people being slaves,
she admitted. But we have a debt to settle, Matthias. The pardon is my penance. And I won't be the person who keeps you from your freedom again.
I don't want the pardon.
She stared at him. But...
Maybe your people would become slaves. Or maybe they would become an unstoppable force. If Yulvayur lives and the secret of Jorda Parem becomes known, anything is possible.
For a long moment, they held each other's gaze. The sun sat low in the sky, light falling in golden shafts across the snow. She could see the blonde of Matthias's lashes peeking through the black antimony she had used to strain them. She'd have to tailor him again soon. In those days after the shipwreck, she and Matthias had formed an uneasy truce. What had grown up between them had been something fiercer than affection. An understanding that they were both soldiers, that in another life they might have been allies instead of enemies. She felt that now.
It would mean betraying the others, she said.
They won't get their pay from the Merchant Council.
True.
And Kaz will kill us both.
If he learns the truth.
Have you tried lying to Kaz Brekker? Matthias shrugged.
Then we die as we lived.
Nina looked at Nestor's emaciated form. For a cause.
We are of one mind in this,
said Matthias.
Bojul Bajur will not leave the Ice Court alive.
The deal is the deal,
she said in Kurch, the language of trade, a tongue that belonged to neither of them.
The deal is the deal,
he replied. Matthias swung his pick and brought it down in a hard arc, a kind of declaration. She hefted her pick and did the same. Without another word, they returned to the work of the grave, falling into a determined rhythm. Kaz was right about one thing, at least. She and Matthias had finally found something to agree on.
Part 4. The Trick to Falling. 21. Inej. Inej felt like she and Kaz had become twin soldiers, marching on, pretending they were fine, hiding their wounds and bruises from the rest of the crew. It took 2 more days of travel to reach the cliffs that overlooked Jerholm. But the going was easier as they moved south and toward the coast. The weather warmed, the ground thawed, and she began to see signs of spring. Inej had thought Jerholm would look like Ketterdam, a canvas of black, gray, and brown, tangled streets dense with mist and coal smoke, ships of every kind in the harbor, pulsing with the rush and bustle of trade. Jerholm's harbor was crowded with ships, but its tidy streets marched to the water in an orderly fashion, and the houses were painted such colors, red, blue, yellow, pink, as if in defiance of the wild white land and the long winters this far north. Even the warehouses by the quay were wrought in colorful cheer. It looked the way she'd imagined cities as a child, everything candy-hued and in its proper place. Was the Ferrolind already waiting at the dock, snug in its berth, flying its Kirch flag and the distinctive orange and green party color of the Hanrot Bay Company? If the plan went the way Kaz hoped, tomorrow night they would stroll down the Jerholm Quay with Beaujul Bayor in tow, hop on their ship, and be far out to sea before anyone in Fierda was the wiser. She preferred not to think of what tomorrow night might look like if the plan went wrong. Inej glanced up to where the ice court stood like a great white sentinel on a massive cliff overlooking the harbor. Matthias had called the cliffs unscalable, and Inej had to admit they would present a challenge, even for the Wraith. They seemed impossibly high, and from a distance their white lime surface looked clean and bright as ice. "Cannon," said Jesper. Kaz squinted up at the big guns pointed out at the bay. "I've broken into banks, warehouses, mansions, museums, vaults, a rare book library, and once the bedchamber of a visiting Kalish diplomat whose wife had a passion for emeralds. But I've never had a cannon shot at me." "There's something to be said for novelty," offered Jesper. Inej pressed her lips together. "Hopefully it won't come to that." "Those guns are there to stop invading armadas," Jesper said confidently. "Good luck hitting a skinny little schooner cutting through the waves bound for fortune and glory."
"I'll quote you on that when a cannonball lands in my lap," said Nina. They slipped easily into the traffic of travelers and traders where the cliff road met the northern road that led to Upper Jerholm. The upper town was a rambling extension of the city below, a sprawling collection of shops, markets, and inns that served the guards and staff who worked at the ice court, as well as visitors. Luckily, the crowds were heavy and motley enough that one more group of foreigners could go unnoticed. And Inej found herself breathing a bit easier. She'd worried that she and Jesper might be dangerously conspicuous in the Fjerdan capital's sea of blondes. Maybe the crew from the Shuhan was relying on the jumbled crowd for cover, too. Signs of Hringkala celebrations were everywhere. The shops had created elaborate displays of pepper cookies baked in the shape of wolves, some hanging like ornaments from large twisting trees, and a bridge spanning the river gorge had been festooned with ribbons in Fjerdan silver. One way into the ice court, and one way out. Would they cross this bridge as victors tomorrow?
"What are they?"
Wylan asked, pausing in front of a peddler's cart laden with wreaths made of the same twisting branches and silver ribbons.
"Ash trees," replied Matthias. "Sacred to Jell."
"There's supposed to be one in the middle of the White Island," said Nina, ignoring the warning look the Fjerdan cast her. "It's where the Druskala gather for the listening ceremony." Kaz tapped his walking stick on the ground.
"Why is this the first I'm hearing of it?" "The ash is sustained by the spirit of Jill," said Matthias. "It's where we may best hear his voice."
Kaz's eyes flickered.
"Not what I asked. Why isn't it on our plans?"
Because it's the holiest place in all of Fjorda, and not essential to our mission. I say what's essential. Anything else you decided to leave out in your great wisdom? The Ice Court is a vast structure, Matthias said, turning away. I can't label every crack and corner. Then let's hope nothing is lurking in those corners, Kaz replied. Upper Gerholm had no real center, but the bulk of its taverns, inns, and market stalls were clustered around the base of the hill leading to the Ice Court. Kaz steered them seemingly aimlessly through the streets until he found a run-down tavern, called the Gestinga. "You're?" Jesper complained, peering into the dank main room. The whole place stank of garlic and fish. Kaz just gave a significant glance upward and said, Terrace. What's a Gestinga? Inej wondered aloud.
It means paradise,
said Matthias. Even he looked skeptical. Nina helped secure them a table on the tavern's rooftop terrace. It was mostly empty, the weather still too cold to attract many patrons. Or maybe they'd been scared away by the food, herring in rancid oil, stale black bread, and some kind of butter that looked distinctly mossy. Jesper looked down at his plate and moaned.
Kaz, if you want me dead, I prefer a bullet to poison.
Nina scrunched her nose.
When I don't want to eat, you know there's a problem.
We're here for the view, not the food.
From their table, they had a clear, if distant, view of the Ice Court's outer gate and the first guardhouse. It was built into a white arch formed by two monumental stone wolves on their hind legs and spanned the road leading up the hill to the court. Inej and the others watched the traffic come and go through the gates as they picked at their lunches, waiting for a sign of the prison wagons. Inej's appetite had finally returned, and she'd been eating as much as possible to build her strength, but the skin atop the soup she'd ordered wasn't helping. There was no coffee to be had, so they ordered tea, and little glasses of clear brandvin that burned going down but helped to keep them warm as the wind picked up, stirring the silvery ribbons tied to the ash boughs lining the street below.
We're going to start looking conspicuous soon, said Nina. This isn't the kind of place people like to linger.
Maybe they don't have anyone to take to jail, suggested Wylan.
There's always someone to take to jail, Kaz replied, then bobbed his chin toward the road.
Look.
A boxy wagon was rolling to a stop at the guardhouse. Its roof and high sides were covered in black canvas, and it was drawn by four stout horses. The door at the back was heavy iron, bolted and padlocked. Kaz reached into his coat pocket. Here, he said, and handed Jesper a slender book with an elaborate cover.
Are we going to read to each other?
Just flip it open to the back. Jesper opened the book and peered at the last page, puzzled.
So?
Hold it up so we don't have to look at your ugly face.
My face has character. Besides, oh!
An excellent read, isn't it?
Who knew I had a taste for literature?
Jesper passed it to Wylan, who took it tentatively.
What does it say?
Just look, said Jesper. Wylan frowned and held it up. Then he grinned.
Where did you get this?
Matthias had his turn and released a surprising grunt.
It's called a backless book, said Kaz as Inej took the volume from Nina and held it up.
The pages were full of ordinary sermons, but the ornate back cover hid two lenses that acted as a long glass. Kaz had told her to keep an eye out for women using similarly made mirrored compacts at the Crow Club. They could read the hand a player was holding from across the room, then signal to a partner at the table.
Clever,
Inej remarked as she peered through. To the barmaid and the other patrons on the terrace, it looked like they were handing a book around, discussing some interesting passage. Instead, Inej had a close view of the gatehouse, and the wagon parked in front of it. The gate between the rampant wolves was wrought iron, bearing the symbol of the sacred ash, and bordered by a high spiked fence that circled the Ice Court's grounds.
Four guards,
she noted, just as Matthias had said. Two were stationed on either side of the gatehouse, and one of them was chatting with the driver of the prison wagon, who handed him a packet of documents.
"They're the first line of defense," said Matthias. "They'll check the paperwork and confirm identities, flag anyone they think requires closer scrutiny. By this time tomorrow, the line going through the gates will be full of Hrinkala guests and backed up all the way to the gorge."
"By then, we'll be inside," Kaz said.
"How often do the wagons run?" asked Jesper.
"It depends," said Matthias. "Usually in the morning, sometimes in the afternoon. But I can't imagine they'll want prisoners arriving at the same time as guests."
"Then we have to be on the early wagon," Kaz said.
Inej lifted the backless book again. The wagon driver wore a gray uniform similar to the ones worn by the guards at the gate, but absent any sash or decoration. He swung down from his seat and came around to unlock the iron door.
"Saints," Inej said as the door swung open.
10 prisoners were seated along benches that ran the wagon's length, their wrists and feet shackled, black sacks over their heads. Inej handed the book back to Matthias, and as it made the rounds, Inej felt the group's apprehension rise. Only Kaz seemed unfazed.
"Hooded, chained, and shackled?" said Jesper. "You sure we can't go in as entertainers? I hear Weiland really kills it on the flute."
"We go in as we are," said Kaz, "as criminals."
Nina peered through the lenses of the book.
"They're doing a head count."
Matthias nodded.
"If procedure hasn't changed, they'll do a quick head count at the first checkpoint, then a second count at the next checkpoint, where they'll search the interior and undercarriage for any contraband."
Nina passed the book to Inej.
"The driver's going to notice 6 more prisoners when he opens the door."
"If only I thought of that,"
Kaz said dryly.
"I can tell you've never picked a pocket."
"And I can tell you've never given enough thought to your haircut."
Kaz frowned and ran a self-conscious hand along the side of his head.
"There's nothing wrong with my haircut that can't be fixed by 4 million Kruger."
Jesper cocked his head to one side, gray eyes alight.
"We're going to use a bunk biscuit, aren't we?"
"Exactly." "I don't know that word, bunk biscuit," said Matthias, running the syllables together.
Nina gave Kaz a sour look.
"Neither do I. We're not as streetwise as you, dirty hands."
"Nor will you ever be," Kaz said easily. "Remember our friend, Mark?"
Weiland winced.
"Let's say the Mark is a tourist walking through the barrel. He's heard it's a good place to get rolled, so he keeps patting his wallet, making sure it's there, congratulating himself on just how alert and cautious he's being. No fool, he. Of course, every time he pats his back pocket or the front of his coat, what is he doing? He's telling every thief on the stave exactly where he keeps his scrub."
"Saints," grumbled Nina. "I've probably done that."
"Everyone does," said Inej.
Jesper lifted a brow.
"Not everyone."
"That's only because you never have anything in your wallet," Nina shot back.
"Mean."
"Factual."
"Facts are for the unimaginative," Jesper said with a dismissive wave.
"Now a bad thief," continued Kaz. "One who doesn't know his way around, just makes the grab and tries to run for it. Good way to get pinched by the Stadtwatch. But a proper thief, like myself, nabs the wallet and puts something else in its place."
"A biscuit?"
"Bunk biscuit is just a name. It can be a rock, a bar of soap, even an old roll if it's the right size. A proper thief can tell the weight of a wallet just by the way it changes the hang of a man's coat. He makes the switch, and the poor Mark keeps tapping his pocket, happy as can be. It's not until he tries to pay for an omelet or lay his steak at a table that he realizes he's been done for a sucker. By then, the thief is someplace safe, counting up his scrub.
Weiland shifted unhappily in his chair.
Duping innocent people isn't something to be proud of. It is if you do it well.
Kaz gave a nod to the prison wagon, now rumbling its way up the road toward the ice court and the second checkpoint.
We're going to be the biscuit.
Hold on, said Nina. The door locks on the outside. How do we get in and get the door locked again?
That's only a problem if you don't know a proper thief. Leave the locks to me.
Jesper stretched out his long legs.
So, we have to unlock, unchain, and incapacitate 6 prisoners, take their places, and somehow get the wagon sealed tight again, without the guards or other prisoners being the wiser?
That's right.
Any other impossible feats you'd like us to accomplish?
The barest smile flickered over Kaz's lips.
I'll make you a list.
Proper thievery aside, Inej would have liked a proper night's sleep and a proper bed. But there would be no comfortable stay at an inn. Not if they were going to find their way onto a prison wagon and into the ice court before Hringkala began. There was too much to do. Nina was sent out to chat up the locals and try to discover the best place to lay their ambush for the wagon. After the horrors of the Gastinga's herring, they demanded Kaz provide something edible and were waiting for Nina in a crowded bakery nursing hot cups of coffee mixed with chocolate, the wreckage of demolished rolls and cookies spread out over their table in little piles of buttery crumbs. Inej noticed that Matthias' mug sat untouched before him, slowly cooling as he stared out the window.
This must be hard for you, she said quietly. To be here, but not really be home.
He looked down at his cup.
You have no idea.
I think I do. I haven't seen my home in a long time.
Kaz turned away and began chatting with Jesper. He seemed to do that whenever she mentioned going back to Ravka. Of course, Inej couldn't be certain she'd find her parents there. Suli were travelers. For them, home really just meant family.
Are you worried about Nina being out there? Inej asked.
No.
She's very good at this, you know. She's a natural actress.
I'm aware,
he said grimly.
She can be anything to anyone.
She's best when she's Nina.
And who's that?
I suspect you know better than any of us.
He crossed his huge arms.
She's brave,
he said grudgingly.
And funny.
Foolish. Every last thing needn't be a joke.
Bold, Inej said.
Loud.
So why do your eyes keep searching the crowd for her?
They do not, Matthias protested.
She had to laugh at the ferocity of his scowl. He drew a finger through a pile of crumbs.
Nina is everything you say. It's too much.
Inej murmured, taking a sip from her mug.
Maybe you're just not enough.
Before he could reply, the bell on the bakery door jingled and Nina sailed inside, cheeks rosy, brown hair in a gorgeous tangle, and declared, "Someone needs to start feeding me sweet rolls immediately." For all Matthias' grumbling, Inej didn't think she imagined the relief on his face. It had taken Nina less than an hour to discover that most of the prison wagons passed by a roadhouse known as the Warden's Way Station on the route to the ice court. Inej and the others had to trek almost 2 miles out of Upper Gerholm to locate the tavern. It was too crowded with farmers and local laborers to be useful, so they headed farther up the road. And by the time they found a spot with enough cover and a stand of trees large enough to suit their purpose, Inej felt close to collapse. She thanked her saints for Jesper's seemingly limitless energy. He cheerfully volunteered to continue on and be the lookout. When the prison cart rolled by, he'd signal the rest of the crew with a flare, then sprint back to join them. Nina took a few minutes to tailor Jesper's forearm, hiding the dregs tattoo and leaving a blotchy patch of skin over it. She would see to Kaz's tattoos and her own that night. It was possible no one at the prison would recognize Ketterdam gang or brothel markings, but there was no reason to take the chance.
No mourners,
Jasper called as he loped off into the twilight, long legs eating up the distance easily.
No funerals, they replied.
Inej sent a real prayer along with him, too,